meeting of the Shrine Prayer.
God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and restrooms exclusively across the hall. They are across the hall up a few small flight of stairs. At this time, we'd like to ask everyone to silence their cell phones, and we respectfully ask those present to refrain from moving around the room, as this will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum, so it allow everyone to be able to listen uninterrupted. This group practices a spiritual foundation, anonymity, a singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus precisely on how we recover from the illness of alcoholism based on AA simple actions. I will now read the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another, sharing their experience, strength, and hope in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation, ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step being discussed tonight. This evening, we're discussing step one. And we're pleased to welcome our panel, which is Glenn and Scott. So it goes, I'll read a paragraph, and I'll give you the page number, and then each of the panel will share on it. And so the first reading we're going to have tonight. So on step one, and I'll read the step first, we admitted we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives become unmanageable. This is step one, part one, actually. And we're going to start on page XXVI. It's in the doctor's opinion. And it starts, the physician who at our request gave this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his view in another statement which follows. In the statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcohol torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight of reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things are true to some extent. In fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we're sure that our bodies are sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out the physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Okay. You want to go first, Scott?
Damn. Yeah, hi, I'm Scott. I'm an alcoholic. Get a couple things out the way. Got a home group, principal's group at Chesapeake. We meet at 8 o'clock on Tuesday nights at corner of Greenbrier and the Kempsville Road in Chesapeake. My sobriety date is July 10th, 2006. And that just still amazes me. You know, it really does. Step one, this is quite a step. You know, my whole life I've been wondering why I drink so much. Not really that, but why I kept getting caught and getting in trouble. The drinking part, I really kind of had that under control, like most of us sitting here. But, You know, I was told everything it says here. You know, I maladjusted to life. I lived in full fight for reality. You know, I did. And I kind of liked it like that. Yeah. In the beginning, beginning of my drinking career, I like saying career, most of us do, and I was probably 10 at the beginning, and I like being, you know, from full flight of reality on Friday nights. You know, I like the whole process of standing in front of 7-Eleven, getting somebody to buy me beer, running in the woods with my 10-year-old buddies. You know, smoking these cigarettes bigger than we were, and had a 40-ounce split. There weren't even 40 ounces back then. I think there was still 32 to split between three or four of us and get full flight from reality. You know, I like that. I really did. And then some years later, quite a few years later, when I finally got sober, I'm not going to tell you the first time being exposed to AA. I was 16 when I was exposed to AA. I got sober at 40. So it was quite some time I knew what was going on. You know, I liked living in that craziness. I really did. And I thought it was perfectly normal. I just thought y'all had a problem. I was good. I can, you know, I don't mind getting arrested and going to jail a couple times a month. It's not a big deal to me. You know, become pretty normal. And there's a lot of us probably sitting in this room that are like, what's wrong with that? But that was my full flight from reality. I didn't know most people didn't go to jail on weekends. I had no idea. That was my reality. You know? And I lived that quite a few years. You know, I kind of grabbed a hold of this too, the theory that we have an allergy to alcohol. You know, at 40 years old, I started to believe that. And I got involved with this program that they've been telling me to come to for so many years, and that was where it started. So once I accepted that, I was pretty much ready to do anything. So I'm going to let Glenn go. Thanks.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Glenn Mifflin.
Hey, Glenn.
Hey, I too have a sponsor. He's hiding back there somewhere. I can't quite pick him out, but he's back there somewhere. And I have a home group. It's the Big Book in Ghent on Tuesday afternoons at 5:30 at Stockley Gardens, and only at the Christ of St. Luke's Church. We read the Big Book, and then we even get into the stories in the back, a section at a time, after we do the first section each time. I got to tell you, my sobriety date is January 16th, 1995. I was 39 years old when I came in here, so I had a career. Like Scott said, I started at 14, I ended at 39, and you know, I hopefully retired my drinking career at 25 years, hopefully. As long as I stay with what I've learned and keep doing it, I've been told, and they say this is a promise, that I'll get to stay sober and get to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so far it's been true, and I still firmly believe that. I have to tell you right off the bat, the page 1 through 164, when I first came here, I was told to read that, and it didn't make any sense to me. It was almost like I was reading a foreign language. I just didn't get it. Reading it by myself did absolutely nothing for me. But I read the doctor's opinion, and I did get a few things out of the doctor's opinion. It made some sense to me, and the one thing that really stuck with me was the idea that there was a physical factor involved in my drinking that I couldn't account for. I too was accused from time to time of those different things, of being maladjusted, in full flight, you know, mental defective. And like it says, those things are true in my case. But there just seemed to me to be something else involved in this whole thing that kept me drinking when either I didn't want to or didn't have a desire to, but I had to keep doing it. And toward the end, that's the way it was. I had to keep drinking. It wasn't a conscious thought on my part or an unconscious thought. It was just something that I did. And when it brings in that allergy part, because I drank every day for a long time, when it brings in that allergy part, that makes sense to me, that I was chasing that allergy or that, you know, that part of my body, I was trying to put out that fire that I'd created in there with more alcohol and keep pouring more and more on top of it so that I could hopefully extinguish it, but I never did find it. You know, never could get rid of that because it was just the more I drank, the more I wanted. You know, my body just kept telling me more and more and more. So when I read that the first time, it sort of, you know, I don't want to be too hard on that, but it eased off that idea that it was a moral issue for me. Because, you know, I had great morals as far as you guys were concerned. I didn't live up to them, but I expected you to. And that was, you know, I had high standards. I lowered my bar, but your bar stayed up there. So, but, you know, knowing that, it just didn't make sense that there was just a mental issue or a mind control or willpower or whatever you want to call it that would allow me to stop drinking, even though I wanted to stop or I didn't want to stop. You know, somehow or another I could stop drinking, but it definitely interested me when I read that. And the idea still to this day is something that I just love that idea that it's not just a mental thing. My problem, once the allergy is extinguished in me or that compulsion is extinguished, then it becomes a complete mental problem for me. You know, alcoholism is a mental problem for me. But that alcohol part of it where I'm still drinking, it's more than just a mental thing. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, our next reading is on XXVII. And it starts with, "We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol in these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class, never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all, and once having formed the habit, found they cannot break it. Once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve."
Yeah. I can agree with that. You know, I got a lot of friends today, and that's a miracle in itself. But I got a lot of guys I work with, a lot of guys that I work with who are problem drinkers, and every time I get to read this, it reminds me of how I was, and then I go back like Liz, and I try to understand why you're like you are, and I can't do that, you know, because I'm screwed up too. We believe, that means there's a bunch of us. That was kind of comforting. It's not me no more, you know. That was my problem, was me, and I like to try to fix me all the time. So when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I gave it a really good shot, the we thing kind of got me, you know, the fellowship part. I still enjoy the fellowship a whole lot. Probably not as active as I used to be, but, you know, I'm getting older, and I can't. But AA, the we is a good. A chronic alcoholic is a manifestation of an allergy. The phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. This happened to me quite often, you know, quite often. I don't know how many times I would tell myself, I'm not going to drink. Especially 7:30 in the morning, and I got it, you know, I'm at work, and I didn't go home. Sometimes I slept in the parking lot at work, and guys would come by and knock on the window. Here he is again, get your ass up and go to work, you know, let's go. And I'm not doing that again. And then come noon, you know, well, you know, beer kind of, the taste was covered in my mouth. And then at 4 o'clock, when a whistle would blow, when I did work at the shipyard, you know, I was with the crowd. We're all running the stores, buying a beer. And I could relate to that one beer. I'm only going to have one. So early in the morning, I was telling myself at this, you know, I didn't get much of a hangover. It was just lack of sleep. I didn't get the pounding head stuff that everybody got. I just got lack of sleep because I could drink all night long. And it'd go from not drinking to maybe drinking to I can't wait to drink. You know, and I had no idea that this disease I got was telling me this stuff. You you know, and the disease is me. So I'm talking to myself all the time on a regular basis. And at four, once I drank that one first beer, that was it. 7:30 in the morning, the guy's knocking on my window again, man. Get your ass up and get to work. How does this keep happening over and over and over again? You know, I would tell myself, why? I'm not doing it again. 12 o'clock, God, I'm getting thirsty. 4 o'clock, I take that one drink. You know, it's done. I remember I would go to jail. I went to jail a lot. I'd go to jail and I'd spend some time in there, and I, you know, when I'd wake up and, you know, check myself out, make sure nothing was broken, stitches, whatever. And I'd say, I'm not doing it again, you know. And then I'd be asking the sheriff, you know, the deputy, well, you know, what'd I do? He's like, wow, you really don't know. Nah, man, but I know one thing, I'm not going to do that again. He says, you got like, you know, 30 days or whatever. You can't get bond no more, so you're going to be here a while, because, you know, people quit bonding you out after a while. And I'd send it until I would get out. But through that whole process, no matter how long, I wouldn't do it again. To halfway through, well, you know, one's not going to hurt me. To as soon as I got out, I'm running to the store to get a beer. You know, and I don't know how this is happening. Why does this keep happening? And I read this stuff right here, and it tells me, because I'm a chronic alcoholic, this is going to happen. If I was a regular drinker, a normal drinker, it wouldn't happen to me. You know, once I take a drink, I'm done, man. I'm done. I'm going to continue to drink because I'm thirsty. I cannot stop. I don't have that power, you know. And the loss of power, to come to find out, is the first step. I'm powerless. You know, and I had a real struggle with that, a really hard struggle. But it was kind of obvious when you're getting locked up as much as I was for stupid stuff. You know, just being a public nuisance. Nothing, you know, I wasn't no big freaking criminal. I was a nuisance. They would just say, put him away just so we don't got to bother with him tonight. You know, I'm surprised they didn't lock me up before I drank, just because they knew what was going to happen. You know, but this is what the book is telling me. When I read this stuff, I can relate. You know, that's what I had to do finally after years of practicing trying to drink myself straight. Giving into this thing, surrendering, giving up, and saying, all right, well, now these words start to make sense. And that only happened when somebody read them with me. Because I read this book, I was like, Glenn, I must have read this book 20 times, man, when I was cured. You know, and drank every time. But when I finally gave up and I started reading it, you know, it says right here, these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. I got that. Just for today. That's what my sponsor says. You ain't got nothing. Just for today. Today. No, you can't drink today. That's step one. And that's what I had to finally accept and to be able to move on. You know, I'm powerless over alcohol, and I know that today. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad he brought up that nuisance thing. I was, my incarceration time was 3.5 hours, and that was only because the banks didn't open until 9 o'clock the next day so that they could get change for this $100 bill that I carried around to get myself out of trouble. So I don't have a lot of experience being in jail because of what I did. It looks like if you define going to jail as being a nuisance, then I was less than a nuisance, and I kind of flew under the radar, which is something I'm still rather good at. My sponsor tells me from time to time that I'll fly under the radar and disappear for a while, and then I'll come back, and he'll ask me how things are going, and I'll, you know, give him a full rundown, get current with him again, and then I'll disappear for a little while, and, you know, get busy with my life, which is, you know, extremely important these days and has been since I got sober. So I try not to do that. I try not to do that. I'm glad Iran's here. At least somebody will laugh at my silly jokes. I like this part of it because it talks about me specifically. I know there's two kinds of alcoholics. There's the acute kind and the chronic kind. And I'm that chronic kind. I have this problem that when I drink, I set off that allergy that I'll chase. And then when I don't drink, I have that obsession in my head that tells me, you know, you got to keep doing this. It'll be okay. Nothing's bad's going to happen. Yada, yada, yada. You know, it just keeps rolling around in my head until I can put it out. And I found out that was, you know, alcohol was a good thing to get rid of that voice in my head. It quieted all that stuff down. I was a blackout drinker. I blacked out from the second time when I drank as much as I wanted. And a lot of people I hear say that scared them. That just ticked. I mean, it was the ultimate. I thought it was great. You know, time went away. I traveled somewhere, and I was back where I started, and I didn't know what I did. That was just awesome. That was the best thing that could have happened to a guy like me, you know. So, but the idea that this only happens to a certain section of people that drink makes sense to me, and I'm a firm believer that in order to get what you need to get out of Alcoholics Anonymous and what it has to say, that you have to be a chronic alcoholic. You know, I'm one of those few people that I didn't do drugs. I found alcohol. That's all I ever wanted from then on. I didn't take anything. I just drank. And it did for me what I wanted every time. And when it got toward the end, it was still doing something for me. I don't know what it was, but it was still doing something for me. And I still felt like I was doing okay with it. Everybody else was having a problem at that point, but I was still in firm control of my life. So I thought. But as we both all know, that, you know, I didn't know, as the doctor says later on, I didn't know the difference between true and false. I lived in a fantasy world. I lived in delusion. I lived in what I made up to be reality. And that was my life. And when I got sober, all of that fell apart, and I was at a point where I had, you know, absolutely no idea how to live. Anyway, I'd lost that, what it talks about, self-confidence, my ability to live without alcohol. I'd lost that. I was constantly having problems pile up on me that I had no ability to solve. I just couldn't figure a way to get around them or out of them or whatever. So I'd drink. And when I started drinking, I kept going. You know, and the last 9 years of my life with alcohol was a daily adventure of drinking as much as I could so that the, you know, the top part of my head would shut off. And then, you know, getting up the next day, like Scott said, and starting it all over again. And doing everything I could to make it till 4 o'clock so that I didn't drink during work time. That was my effort in life. That was all I did, was try not to drink for 8 hours, 8-9 hours during the day, and then drink all I could between the other 16. So, you know, if that doesn't define a chronic alcoholic, I don't know what would. You know, so I'm a firm believer that I'm part of that, and that's the type of person that's going to get from Alcoholics Anonymous what the program has to offer, that chronic type. Now, the other people might get something from it, but I'm going to get that full picture, that full idea, because that's who they're talking to, is that chronic person. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, our next reading is on the same page, XXVII. Men and women drink essentially because of like the effects produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit that it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the ease and comfort which comes from taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope for his recovery.
I drink because I like it, you know. But there's nobody in here that likes drinking more than me. Nobody. And I would debate you about that. Nobody like doing other things more than me either. I got a friend named Larry, he says pharmaceuticals, so I'm going to leave it at that. I like doing drinking and a lot of pharmaceuticals. For days. For days at a time. You know, weeks sometimes. You know, time was not an issue when I was drinking and drugging. It really was, because I never knew. The only time I knew was when I was out and I had to get some more. And I liked it. You know, I like the effects. I like what it did for me. I like that, back that full flight from reality. I kind of made a commitment, you know, to myself that I wasn't going to get sober ever again, you know, because there was no sense in being sober. And I didn't know about this restless, irritable discontent. You know, but now, after getting sober, I know what that is. So I said, I'm not going to feel that. You know, when I come out of the shipyard, I was 27 years old, 26, I don't know what it was. They put me out, and I got a job in construction, and I was quick to respond because I already knew that the first beer in the morning was the best one. You know, the best one. As soon as I woke up, I knew that. Now I could really do it. I didn't have to run out the shipyard to the store and get it. I wasn't like Glenn. I couldn't go 8-9 hours, nor did I want to go 8-9 hours because it didn't make no sense to me. You know, I liked being drunk. I didn't like being Scott. I really didn't. You know, I could care less about me being sober. I was no fun. I was dull. I was short. I was fat. You know, I could drink 4 or 5 beers. Man, I was the baddest dude that walked the planet. You know? So why would I give that up? Why would I give that up? Alcohol did this for me. It fixed every problem that was in my head. You know, at once. I didn't have to wait for nothing. You know, this is what this stuff did. And when you say I can't drink, oh, no, no, no. That's not going to be an issue, you know. I promise I will not get caught drinking and driving ever again. I got my first DUI going from one bar to another bar. I'm full of stories, so this is step one, so you're going to hear a lot of them. My first DUI going from one bar happy hour to a go-go bar. The cop pulled me because there was 3 of us in the car and I got my stereo playing, you know, head-banging heavy metal in the 80s. And I'm playing this music, they pulled me over and I look at the time and it's 7 o'clock and I hop in his car. He's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm drunk, let's get this over with. I could be out by midnight and catch the other head. This is what I do. This is what I do, and sure enough, I was out by midnight sitting at the bar getting my car back from my buddy who he let drive, drunker than me. Makes sense, you know, but that's what I do because I don't want to be sober, man. That 4 hours was terrible, you know. Plus, I'm in jail, and I got to fake all this stuff to make myself look good in front of the judge when I get there in about 3 months. You know, I'm pre-planning everything. I'm looking ahead. I'm projecting my ass off. I'm going to fix it. Right now, when they let me out, I'm going to that bar. You know, there was no reason to ever get sober was my idea. You know? I talked about it. I can remember this in the meetings, when I would come to meetings when I was in my 20s, and, you know, the courts were making me come, and, you know, sometimes I'd pop in when I didn't sign my own sheet, you know, and I'd just sit there and look, and they're giving all these depressing-ass stories, and I was like, come on, man, this isn't good. You know, this isn't good. This phenomenon of craving y'all talking about, just keep drinking. You know, I hear people talk about the massive hangovers they get in the morning. Stupid, man, drink a beer. You know, it's not hard. Once you throw the first one up, the second one's bound to stay. Yeah, it's gonna stay, man. y'all promised me my life back when I got to AA, and I almost left. I didn't want that life. You know, as I told you, I started drinking at 10 and doing other pharmaceuticals by 10 and a half. And it was nonstop till I was 40. I didn't want it. I never acquired shit. You get everything back you lost. I never had nothing. I never lost nothing. That was an amazing thing. You know? Drinking, man, after they have succumbed to the desire again, so many of us do the phenomenon. That's just terrible. I know about the phenomenon of craving. I do not ever want to forget that. That's why I sponsor guys, and I got a sponsor who keeps me in line most of the time. Who are you laughing at? We got the same sponsor. You know, I can remember my first sponsor. He was a great guy. He lived in Norfolk. I was, you know, my home group was in Norfolk for a long time. And he lived down on Collie Avenue. And I walked into his office one day. I was about a year and a half sober. I had got my license back. That was an amazing thing to me. And he was just smiling. And I was like, oh, shit, what did he know? He said, it happens. I said, what are you talking about? He says, the psychic change. He said, it's happened to you. Somebody had to tell me. Because I'm not that bright. I did not know that this was... And then I just had to sit back and think, you know. It's been like a year and a half I hadn't drank, and I don't know the last time I thought about a drink. And I'm the kind of guy that thought drinking was the only option. Why be sober? You know, it happened. And I believe this to be true. When I talk to guys, when I help them, when I'm sponsoring, I'm like, this is how I drink. Now I don't. Something happened. You know, and this is probably one of the truest statements in this book. This is repeated over and over, and unless a person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. And I hope that's the message I carry when I talk to someone. There's hope. You know, there's hope. You know, I like shooting dope. I like smoking crack. I like drinking. I don't do it today. Something had to get in there. You know, something had to happen to me. And something happens to everybody I meet in Alcoholics Anonymous who stay. You know, and that's the greatest gift that I believe this program has to offer is when you get to watch somebody change. Wow. You know, it's come full circle. That's an amazing gift. So I'm going to let Glenn go. I'll talk for him.
I remember, I still to this day remember the very first time I had alcohol enough to where it had an effect on me, and I remembered it. It was just the most amazingly spiritual experience I've ever had in my life. Yeah. I mean, I had feelings that I didn't know existed. And then the next time I blacked out, because the next time I wanted it more than the first time. And I never had that experience again, but I chased it, man. I chased it for 25 years. But that first time was the only time that I ever experienced it. So I, too, liked drinking. I liked the taste. I was a beer drinker. Some people say that's, you know, kind of the sissy way to go, but I drank a lot of beer. And I liked beer. I liked the taste of it. I'd drink... you know, regular hard stuff every once in a while, but you know, the idea of having a, you know, a cold beer was just amazing to me, and it always was. Unlike Scott, it took three or four for me to get that first one down and to stay down sometimes, but you know, because I'd give the first three back. But you know, eventually I you know, I didn't give up and I kept going. You know, so. But you know, that was just the price of being a good drinker. You know, you just don't give up. You just keep going, keep pounding it. And like I said before, you know, I'd gotten to a point where I didn't know true from the false. I lived in a state of constant delusion on what was going on around me. It had to be in flux because. For me to be able to justify what I was doing, it had to be changeable, you know. So, you know, it's constantly moving around, and it's nothing permanent, and you know, it's all make believe. It's all just an illusion. So, When I got sober, I was faced with reality for the first time in many, many years, and you know, it was frightening. It was really, really scary. I remember the first thought that I had. I was not in AA yet. I was going to try the medical profession, and I was given that option by my significant other, my wife, and so I took the easy way out. I was going to go to the medical profession, and on the way up there, I was thinking, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do without alcohol. I don't know what to do without drinking, because I did everything drinking. And I went into my what was going to be my therapist's office. She wasn't at the time, but went in there and told her, you know, that I was. She asked me why I was there, and I said, well, some people have a problem with my drinking. And she said, stop right there. I can't help anybody that's an alcoholic. If you get yourself into AA and get some time behind you, maybe you can come back. But, you know. So she kicked me out of her office, and I thought, you know, that was a hell of a note. You know, I'm willing to pay for her to listen to my sad stories, and she kicks me out, you know. So I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, not by choice. My choice was to go the easy way, but I ended up in AA. And as it's turned out, this is where I belonged in the first place. Anyway, I never experienced, well, yeah, I did. I did one time. My wife got on my ass one time about, excuse me, on my back one time about drinking too much. And so I was going to show her that I could stop. So I stopped for about a week and a half. And I was making life so damn miserable for her that she decided to go buy me a 12-pack. And she said, here. I don't need to put up with your stuff anymore. Go ahead and get drunk. And I said, okay. I will. So I was irritable and restless and discontented, but it was directed at her. You know, it wasn't the fact that I was just having a hard time living. At least that was the thing I told myself. But once I had those drinks again, once I could drink like I wanted to again, everything eased off and I was back in the saddle. It was just awesome. It was great. And that was, you know, doing what I wanted to with impunity. You know, when I can do what I want to and nobody's giving me crap, I'm living life large. That's the way it should be. But like it says, you know, that craving developed, you know, that allergy kept kicked in, and I was off to the races. It wasn't me deciding who was going to do what and what was going to happen. It was the alcohol. And one of the things that really struck me as an important fact of this, you know, I've been told that if I can leave step one feeling really good about my situation, that I haven't really done it that well. You know, because leaving step one, I should be in a state of extreme hopelessness. You know, otherwise, I'm not going to be willing to do what's necessary to continue on. So when they talk about there is little hope for recovery, you know, that hits me hard. That hits me real hard that I don't have any hope. There's nothing I can do, me, that I can do to affect any change in what I'm doing. And that is an awful place for me to be, because as far as I was concerned, I didn't have anything that had defeated me in my life. You know, I was not willing to admit defeat to anything. Yet when I had to admit defeat to a bottle or a can, that just was beyond belief. You know, so at the end of the first step, you know, being hopeless was something I understand. I understand completely what hopelessness is. You know, the fact that I don't have any hope on my own to do anything to affect the change that has to happen for me to get sober. You know, and that's an awful place to be. That is an awful place to be. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, the next reading is on XXIX. And it starts on, I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. I've had many men who have, for example, work a period of months on some problem or business deal, which was to be settled at a certain date favorable to them. They took a drink a day or so prior to the date, and then the craving at once became paramount to all other interests, so that the important appointment was not met. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving, which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight.
I've got a lot of experience with having to plan a lot of stuff, especially for business. I stayed drunk a lot. And I took a drink the day before because I was just always drinking. I did some good, I had great ideas when I was drinking. I don't know about y'all, but you know, sometimes we would discuss them in great depth, me and the wall.
Yeah.
Me and the wall. These are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving, which cause men to make supreme sacrifice and continue to fight. I wasn't much of a fighter. When it comes to drinking, you know, like I said, I liked it. I enjoyed it. I didn't want to stop. You know, I just wanted the trouble to go away. And I can remember, I got a little story for you. Me and my friend, we got a trespassing charge for drinking in front of our high school. We were 19 years old. So we got to go to court for this. And we're in court, and they break for lunch. We're like, this really sucks, man. Neither one of us is driving, of course. We lost our license. So we walk up to the store and get a six-pack. We drink our six-pack of beer walking back to the courthouse. And we sat in the courthouse the remainder of the day. We were the last two in there. And the judge looks at us. He says, what are y'all here for? And we told him. He said, we called you right after lunch. How thankful am I that I didn't have to go up in front of him right after lunch with beer on my breath, you know, now that I look back on that. But this is stuff that I would just throw away. I wouldn't think twice on it. Once a beer popped in my head, I'm gone. You know, I'm gone. I got to do this. I got 100 things to do. Wait a minute. You know, a couple beers probably wouldn't hurt it that bad. You know, I used to estimate jobs for what I do today, you know. Every time I'd be in there chewing a stack of gum, talking to people about, you know, you're going to give me a bunch of money and I'm going to do this to your house and do it good. You know, can I get a check? This is just things I did, you know. It didn't bother me to run around the whole of drinking. You know, and the funniest thing is when you get around a guy like me, and I didn't know how much I drank till I got out of jail and I got sober, and I'm back at work, and I'm working with a buddy of mine. He used to drink a little bit less than me, but God, he reeked the alcohol. I said, man, we can't have him in. And this other friend that I work with who drove us around, he said, you smell like that every day of your life. I don't know these things. You know, I had no idea what it was like, man. I do today. But to get me, to get some kind of sense into my head that something's going on was nearly impossible, man. I was such an ego-driven alcoholic, and I can be ego-driven sober, no doubt about it. But as alcohol come into play, you couldn't tell me nothing. You know, not that I was willing to listen anyway, because once you start telling me stuff, I've got to go. You know, it might well be fine and dandy for you, but I got this. You know, my van's blowing up. I don't got a license, but I got a pack of needles in my car and a 12-pack in the back. I'm good, man. Don't tell me what to do. You know? This delusional life I lived in was, you know, it's funny when I look back. And then I can sit down when I'm talking with somebody and get into some very, very hopeless, like Glenn said, hopeless, man. I didn't know nothing. I had no idea that I knew nothing about this disease of alcoholism, you know. I knew nothing. I learned it right here. You guys taught me. I don't know how to tell anybody how to get sober. I don't know how to tell you. I told a guy the other day, yesterday, leaving to Amy, he said, man, Scott, I ain't seen you in 20. Wow, you look different. I'm like, so what's up with you? I'm trying to talk to this guy. And he's like, well, you know, I know, man, I need shit like this. And I'm like, look, man, let me clear the air first of all. I don't give a shit if you quit drinking or not. How about that? Somebody needed to tell me that. Drink your freaking life away. If that's what you want to do. If you want some help, you know my number, you know? And that's a blessing. That's a blessing, man. When we give our numbers out, when I give my number out, I'm giving it out because I want you to call me. I'm not giving out just because it's a rule. You know? It's not a rule. There's no rules. It's because I want you to get better. You know? I want you to come and talk to me and see how I got out of jail in 06 with a bag full of dirty clothes. My life developed into this amazing thing. Not that I give a shit about it, but it developed into an amazing thing. And I have absolutely nothing to do with that. You know? I have absolutely nothing. I worked a program of recovery. It started with step one. I can't drink. I can't drink. I know that. Every morning I'm like, there's no more. Am I going to drink today? Am I going? No, I can't drink. Period. If I drink, you know, jail comes back. Probably pretty quickly. You know, it's just amazing. It's amazing the thinking process that I went through to get me to where I am today. You know, how different my first sponsor, I relate to him all the time because he's the one who took me through steps. It's talking about different reference points throughout your sobriety. And I can look back. Every year I got an anniversary coming up in a month and I'll be reflecting back, man. I'm like, wow, I'm still here. You know what? I can't drink today no more than I could drink 9 years ago. I don't want to forget that. That to me is step one. And in that other book we read, they say that's the only one we have to work 100%. The rest, we just do our best. Thanks.
Yeah, I have to keep that in mind also that, you know, I'm not here by anything that I did that was great in life. I was beaten into a sense of reasonableness, and I ended up here just by pure ass luck. You know, I'm just here and I'm doing the best I can. And you know, I'm just as powerless today, stone cold sober, as I was the first day I walked in here. Alcohol will destroy me just as easily today as it did before. You know, as it would have before. You know, I'm no more immune to it than I was. So I have to keep that in mind. And I remember how desperately bad I felt and how the desperation was all over me when I first came in here. So I have to remember that. And I too was like Scott. Somebody had to tell me that I'd had that psychic change. I didn't really notice it. My sponsor had to say, man, you're different now. And I was amazed. You know, I was just absolutely amazed that something had happened to me that was that big a difference today. So, it's extremely important to have somebody in your life that's tuned into you, that can see these things happen to you, so they can keep you aware of the fact that you are making some kind of progress, and then to slap you down when you get a little bit full of yourself. But I have a real high opinion of my mental capacity. I know my drinking career didn't show that real well, but. You know, I'm not the stupidest guy in the world, but you know, the fact is that this whole thing had gotten beyond my ability to control. I tried to, like I said, I would do the best I could between 7 o'clock and 4 o'clock during the day, 5 days a week. I didn't do that on the weekend, but 5 days a week, I'd do the best I could to not drink, and I didn't realize that was controlling my alcohol. I didn't realize that until I got here, that was control. That was almost like the purest form of control. You know, it wasn't like I was counting my drink. I was trying not to drink for 8 hours a day. Mm. And that's And I still sometimes failed that because I had guys that I worked with that were more than willing to go out at lunchtime and buy a 12-pack. And we could get rid of it before we got back to work. You know, didn't do it all the time, but I did do that. And so, you know, I did drink during the day. I will tell you, or I would have told you that I didn't, because, you know, it wasn't all the time. If you drink during the day all the time, then you drink during the day. I only did it every once in a while, you know, so I didn't fall into that category. But I'm a real weakling when it comes to fighting this stuff. I did not fight it well. Like I told you, I had about a week and a half, and I was such a pain that somebody, you know, took care of my my drinking problem for me and bought it. You know, so I didn't fight the good fight. I gave up real easy when it came to this alcohol thing. I today know that's what I was doing. I was chasing that thing. I was chasing that allergy constantly, because if you drink every day the quantities that I drank, by the time 4 o'clock came, you still had a pretty high level of alcohol in your body, you know, and that craving was really on me by then, you know, that idea that I had to have some, So, you know, it just was a fact of life that's what I needed to do, that, you know, my body was telling me I needed to drink, and I would. So mental control, you know, I tried it. I wasn't real successful at it. But as far as fighting it off, if I had the opportunity to drink and I wasn't supposed to, I was going to drink. That's just the way it was. And if it hurt somebody's feelings, too bad. That's just that's the kind of person that I am. And today, I know that through the steps. I know that's the kind of person I am, that if I'm interfered with what I want to do back then, that I didn't care. I did not care how it affected you. And today I'm okay with that. You know, I don't do that today as often. I still do it sometimes, but I don't do it as often. And I'm a little more in tune to other people's feelings today than I used to be because of that. Because of the steps, and because I don't want to be that person today. You know, I know that I was that person, but I don't want to be that person today. That's it.
Okay, the last paragraph is on page XXX. These and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have is to suggest is entire abstinence.
I didn't want to hear that. I can remember our first AA meeting going to Serenity Lodge over the Military Highway, and they were talking that complete abstinence stuff, and I was like, there's a bar across the street, and there's 7-Eleven at every corner. And y'all are talking about not getting a beer after this meeting. I don't understand that. You know, I was only 16, 17, 18 years old at the time, but I was well into alcoholism. One of our co-founders, Bill W., I love the way he wrote this book, because he keeps saying the same thing over and over and over and over and over. So if it doesn't get you in the first page, it's going to get you in the second, the third, the fourth, or the fifth. It's just steadily saying, if you suffer from a phenomenon of drinking, the only way to get over it is not to drink. And he says it a bunch of times. Then we go proceed with the rest of the program, you know. I couldn't get that. I didn't want to stop drinking. I really, truly, honest to God, did not want to stop drinking. This was going to either kill me or set me free or whatever. You know, I like being, got a friend who told me the other day, he says, you were always like halfway stumbling. You know, I was never walking straight. Even though in my head I walked straight as an arrow. Because I was always drunk. Always somewhat drunk. You know how it says in the book, it becomes the normal. You know, I don't know the truth and the false. I have no idea what it is. I lived in a lie, made up lies. Nothing good ever happened in my life except for I was a drunk. But if you sat down and talked to me, you know, I had everything going on. And I'm sure much of us can relate to that. You know, it's not that bad. Not that bad. 5 DUIs, 4 felony charges. Ah, some people got it worse. You know, I could justify anything. Anything. Anything to keep drinking. Step one. I got to remember it every day. I cannot drink. I'm getting better at it. Thanks.
Yeah, that, like I said before, I read this part of the book and I sort of understood it. And the one thing that really hit me hard was the idea that complete abstinence was the only way. And I'm going, oh, how's this going to happen? I don't understand complete abstinence. So, it was a real scary thing to run up against that. But the idea of a one-day-at-a-time situation, I don't have to deal with anything more than a day at a time today. And 24 hours is plenty enough for a guy like me to have to concentrate on. Usually it's more than enough. I have to, you know, cut it back a little bit to, you know, sometimes hourly increments and deal with that. But I'm a firm believer in what it says, what the doctor says about being a unique entity. You know, the idea that this happens in only a certain segment of people where this allergy and this idea or this mental thing happens with alcohol. So, you know, I know it happened with me, and when I work with somebody, I ask them this question. Have you experienced this? You know, have you experienced the idea that drinking is beyond your control, and it seems like you're chasing something? Like you drink and drink and drink, and you don't know why it's happening that way. Why are you doing that? And if you're separated from alcohol, do you think about it all the time? You know, is it constantly in your head? You know, is that something that you experience? And if they can't answer those questions to the affirmative, then I really don't have anything to offer for them, because that happened to me. That was my experience. So I have to make sure that I'm not trying to give somebody something that they haven't experienced. You know, they have to be able to see it from the point of view that I had. So it's real important that I establish that very first part of our relationship. And if not, then they need to find somebody else to work with, because that wasn't my experience. And I have to be real clear with myself also that I can't help everybody, because my experience is not the same as everybody else's. So, you know, it's just one of those things that I, you know, that I've come to understand. And it's something my sponsor had to beat into my head, that I'm not there for everybody. You know, I'm there for only a few. And those few will get what I have to offer to them. But I have to be real discerning about who I work with, because my experience is not exactly like everybody else. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes tonight's sharing. Let's thank our panel. Basket. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential to every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but they're also the intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free from outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection which unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA announcements?
My name's Donna. I'm an alcoholic. My grand sponsor's home group is having a dinner on the 20th of June. I believe it starts at 5:30. It's they're going to have a AA speaker, Al-Anon speaker, and an Alateen speaker. A lot of food. It's at Talbot Park Baptist Church on Grandy Street. It's in the social hall behind where we have the meetings at, downstairs on the first floor.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone that has questions can see Donna after the meeting.
Yeah.
Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining a home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will home group members raise a hand? And newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you with your first name. Is anyone new here tonight?
My name is BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, BJ. Welcome. Glad you're here.
My name is Will. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bill. Welcome. Glad you're here.
My name is Patrick. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Patrick. Patrick. Welcome. Glad you're here.
My name is Alan.
Hey, welcome. Glad you're here.
My name is Kai. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kai. Welcome. Glad you're here.
We've got literature available.
Really?
There's some newcomer packets over here on the table.
There's a couple more.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hi, I'm David Alcohol.
Hi, my name is Mary, and I'm an alcoholic.
Okay. Yeah.
Glad you're here.
Okay. There's literature available. As I was saying, there's some newcomer packets over on the table, as well as some harmonies that have some announcements in them. And there's books over there, and the price is in the cover. Just see a home group member if you're interested in purchasing a book. Sponsorship is yours for the Ask Him in AA. We urge you, do not delay. If you have any questions about, if you have any questions, there'll be a couple of people here at the table at the end of the meeting. It'll be Evan and Leanne. They'll be up here. If you have any questions on sponsorship, you're welcome to come up and ask them. A reminder, smokers, please use the butt can, which is available outside, and stay well away from the front door. There's other groups that use this church in the evening, so we want to make sure that we're not puffing smoke in their face. Anyway, I'm going to ask the group to thank the panel. Our panel afterwards, it's kind of nice just to come up and say thanks if you enjoyed what they had to say tonight and make them feel a little bit welcome. And after we clean up, everyone's encouraged to continue discussion on steps discussed tonight. We will not be eating at the restaurant tonight because it's closed, but there'll be people around. So if you have any questions about anything you heard tonight, just come up and see one of us. And I've asked somebody to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. Evan.
My name's Evan. I'm an alcoholic.
Evan.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. And for those who care to, we close the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. thine is the kingdom, the power